everybody. Welcome to the All About Movies podcast. If you notice that I sound like I have a cold, it's because I do, but it's almost gone, so don't worry. Today, I have on as a guest someone that doesn't have a cold, film student Alex. Today, we'll be talking about lady superheroes. It's 2018, equality. There's women superheroes now.
I mean, there have been since at least 1984. But now they're better and make more money.
That's true. I guess we should probably start with the good superheroine in the room, Wonder Woman.
Very true. I like Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman was good. It's widely regarded as one of the better movies in the new batch of DC movies.
Yeah, I think out of all of the stuff DC's kind of been churning out, this one hit a lot of good spots for people.
That's true. Isn't it odd though, like, why DC, which started out later in terms of like this connected universe of movies, how come they're the ones with the first like female-led superhero film? Marvel even had like Black Widow a part of the team since Iron Man 2. Yeah, and of course now it seems a little dubious that she's going to get a movie, what with Atomic Blonde and Red Sparrow kind of doing the Black Widow shtick.
Right. I don't know. I mean, I guess growing up, I don't think I remember having like a Marvel female superhero. They all seem to be like knockoffs almost of like the male superheroes. Like, I remember Spider-Girl, and I actually think that might be it. Like, I remember Spider-Girl and that's it. But like, I always knew about Wonder Woman. I knew there was Supergirl and I knew there was Batgirl, but like, Wonder Woman was her own thing. Like, she was like a superhero in her own right who didn't really have like a male superhero to contextualize her. So I think she's just kind of been a really strong presence, like more so than any female superheroes that Marvel has been cranking out, like film and television wise. I think she just like had the foundation and the backstory and just like the cultural foundation to get her own movie and have it feel like a natural film, not something that was forced so that the studio could prove, hey, we like women too. Whereas I think like a Black Widow film might have done that.
That's fair, especially with the sense that being her character as it is, it might have felt more like a spy type movie, like the other examples that we gave with Atomic Blonde in this new Red Sparrow film. Yeah, she's been around forever, just now getting her shot. Do you think it's like a symptom of there not having been that many like great films, or maybe it's not because we had all the Spider-Man films were good in the early 2000s. You had the X-Men films. Back in the 80s, there were the Batman films. The Superman movie came out in, I think, 79. Do you think it's just because there's an issue of quality and technology matching up with heroes? Or do you think that there's something deeper there? Like, why is it not till 2017 that we're getting Wonder Woman the movie?
I mean, if you're going to bring up Batman from the 80s, let's not pretend quality and technology was ever an obstacle for people making superhero movies. Like, those movies kind of look bad, but they still got made, and like, people still enjoy them. I think it's always hard for studios to back a female-led film. Like, we ran into this with The Force Awakens. There was some hesitation to have a film that was led by a female protagonist, a black male protagonist. They just weren't really sure how that was going to play and how that was going to go. Like, you have all of those superhero movies that you just named, like Spider-Man, Batman, Superman, all of their reincarnations, all led by men, all doing somewhat well along the way. You know, and that works. Having men lead action movies works. And I think studios like to rely on that because studios want to make money. And I think Wonder Woman might have been really daunting because it requires so many women. Because it's like, it's just an island of super women. And at least for that opening, what is it, 10 to 20 minutes where they're on that island, you still have to have, like, those actors, you have to pay those actors, you have to be willing to showcase all of these women instead of showcasing a bunch of men. And without getting too heavily into film theory, like, it's hard to do that sometimes in a way that is, like, respectful to the female characters. Like, it's very easy sometimes for filmmakers to fall into that trap of objectifying female characters. And so I think another obstacle is probably finding, like, a director to do it, and a director to do it well. And I think there might also be a hesitation with using female directors, just because that's not nearly as common as male directors.
So I guess, going off what you're saying, and maybe this is a bit too open-ended, or maybe I'm not meaning this confrontationally, but did the director have to be a woman to get this right or get this done well?
I don't think so. I bet there are male directors out there who could have made a very well-made Wonder Woman, and even a very, like, thoughtfully made Wonder Woman. Like, I'm sure there are men out there who are capable of that. But I think the fact that it's taken so long, and that this film was being made and released in the, like, kind of climate and culture that we're in right now, I think it was probably important for it to be directed by a woman. And I think the fact that it's a film that deals with that triumph of femininity made it important that there be a female director. Because, like, if there's any opportunity to utilize a female director, is it not a film that celebrates women?
That's fair, that's fair. Yeah, specifically with the character of Wonder Woman, we have a nice opportunity to compare her being directed by a woman in the titular film Wonder Woman, and also in Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, obscenely long title movie, and Justice League, both of these directed predominantly by Zack Snyder. Justice League, it's a little iffy on how much Joss Whedon stepped in to do,
right?
But we'll say predominantly Zack Snyder for both these films.
Right.
I know you've not seen Batman v Superman in its entirety, but you've seen Justice League.
Yeah, and she has kind of a bigger part in that.
Yeah, so how exactly would you compare the differences in her portrayal?
I mean, it's almost kind of difficult to start out because Wonder Woman is, like, all about her. So she's given a lot of room to kind of just breathe and exist as a character. So that in of itself kind of creates a difference. But I think kind of the difference that came up for me when watching it is that she does kind of start to have to confront those, like, cliches of filmmaking where, like, the men in the film interact with her in a certain way, and it's, like, her job to check them. Because there's a lot of that. There's a lot of where the dialogue she has is her kind of putting Batman in his place when he gets, like, a little suggestive with her, putting Aquaman in his place, even with just, like, a look, kind of putting them in their place when they start getting suggestive or when they start kind of, like, sexualizing her or objectifying her. And she kind of takes on, like, this mothering, like, role where she's the one who kind of brings everyone together, calms everyone down, like, calms all the emotions. She just kind of seems to exist as a more traditional female role, especially because she's put in this group as, like, the woman of the party.
comedian Marc Maron has a nice bit about the women who often end up in one of the co-host roles on early morning talk radio.
Mm-hmm.
She has the job of being, oh boys,
yeah,
to the male co-hosts of hers.
Yeah, and that's kind of what it felt like in Justice League. Whereas for most of Wonder Woman, she is just surrounded by men, but she doesn't operate like that. Like, she isn't just going, oh, you guys, calm down now. She's kind of just doing her own thing, and existing kind of with her own expectations, and when they don't meet those, she's either very dismissive or she's very quick to correct them. In Justice League, she seems, I don't know if tolerant is the right word, but like, she seems much more like accepting of the way that they are, and like, it's her job to kind of like fix them or damage control all of their emotions. Like, she gets a lot more, I think, emotional responsibility for the group that she's in Justice League, which is something that I think ends up happening when you have the token woman of the group. Like, it's her job to like manage the emotions, which isn't something she was tasked with so much in Wonder Woman.
To be fair, slightly to the film, there's definitely character explanations for that.
Right.
Since the Wonder Woman film takes place in the 19-teens,
mm-hmm.
and this is, like, about 100 years later.
Yeah.
So she's had time to grow and mature, perhaps to become slightly matronly.
Yeah.
Who's to say? The big change I noticed, it was hard not to, the camera leered a bit more,
mm-hmm.
with at least Justice League, perhaps a bit more in Dawn of Justice. I haven't seen it since Wonder Woman came out.
Mm-hmm.
But you definitely get a lot more from behind shots. Even while other things are going on, you see people entering the Justice League ship from the point of view of right behind and slightly underneath Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of fighting scenes, you get a lot of her legs splailing about.
Yeah, and in Wonder Woman, you kind of just got shots that were more just like action shots, like you would get of any man, that kind of like show off her merit as like a fighter. Or even like the iconic like thigh jiggle moment. Which is really the only time there's any focus pulled to her body in that film, is just that, like, thigh jiggle, which I think everyone was obsessed with, because, like, even Wonder Woman doesn't have, like, thighs of stone. Like, I thought that was important. But tangent aside, yeah, I did forget about that, how much more present the male gaze is in that film, probably because it is being made by a male director. So he's kind of imposing what he wants to see on the screen.
As part of the rave reviews when Wonder Woman first came out, I liked one that said, I'm sure Gal Gadot has a great ass. I'm glad that I didn't see it, though.
Yeah. Yeah, like, she doesn't have, like, a conservative outfit at all. But it's still a practical outfit. And it's not one that seemed made to show her off as a sexual object. Which was nice.
Yeah. Well, while talking about these great reviews, I don't mean to say that Wonder Woman's not a great movie,
mm-hmm.
but upon rewatches, I've kind of noticed some different things that are a little tropier, a little bit of cliches that are mm-hmm. found in the other DC films. For example, the slow motion used a little too often, and while Wonder Woman got to have more color than about any of the DC movies except for maybe Suicide Squad,
yeah,
there still gets a lot of grayscale in it. The CGI is not always great towards the end battle scene. It kind of, I don't know. On the revisit, I'm like, yeah, I guess in comparison to what we've been given before, it's great. But on its own, how do you feel it stands the test of rewatchability? And not necessarily for the greatness that it is finally having a woman hero.
I mean, I don't think I've rewatched it since we saw it in theaters. And seeing it in theaters for us was a little weird because we saw it in 3D. And seeing it in 3D was kind of weird because it kind of messes with the look of the film, it doesn't always serve, like, the lighting or the coloring best, and you also, rather than, like, paying attention to the story and, like, the technical, formal aspects of the film, you get really caught up in the spectacle. So I suspect that that's a lot of what Wonder Woman rides on, is the spectacle, and kind of is the, like, feat of a female-led superhero movie. Not that it was at all bad. I just don't know if it's the most engaging superhero film that I come upon. You know? Like, it's a pretty basic story. And I know she's gonna live until the end. Like, that's not... I know it's an origin story. I know she's gonna make it all the way through. Yeah, I don't know. It's a great movie. But I think on its own, aside from the hype, the story probably could have... I don't know. Had room to... do more. I don't know. Again, it's hard to say any of this without, like, actually rewatching it, but I think since I left the theater, I kind of suspected that on the rewatch, I would be a little bit underwhelmed by, like, the more formal and, like, behind the scenes aspects.
That's true. And my expectations weren't the highest just from having seen the Batman v Superman movie and having seen Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
You kind of have your expectations lowered a bit, so anything that was even good was going to blow me away. That still being said, I have seen it a second time, still in theaters, oddly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it was still good. It was still good, but again, that's when you start to notice the things that you're like, well, maybe that should be different. Not to be nitpicky, though.
Right.
So, we already talked about her functionality in the Justice League team a bit. And so maybe getting into some of the other superhero franchise films, we can talk about the women's roles in that. Like in the Avenger films, we can start off with Black Widow, who we touched on a little bit.
Yeah.
Already. She's been in, like, every Avenger film so far before they even added the other women.
Yeah.
Yeah, just kind of, she even was in Iron Man 2, for example. Yeah. But kind of in her role in the Avengers, how do you think she works and fits?
I might not be, like, able to recall everything as well, because it's been a while since I've seen a lot of the Avenger movies. But if I remember right, she's kind of allowed to exist as one of the guys. Like, she doesn't feel as much like the token female of the group, which, like, she totally is, because there's no other woman in that group, so she kind of automatically becomes a token, kind of showing off, hey, we're diverse, but she doesn't fall into that role that Wonder Woman kind of does in Justice League, where she's having to, like, corral the men and be like, all right, guys, cut it out. Time to get back to business. Like, all of them in that group kind of have a tendency to run high with their emotions. And they all kind of have to work out their interpersonal relationships together on their own. Like, it's never seemed like it was her job to do that. She's kind of allowed to have her own, like, closer relationship with Hawkeye. She's allowed to kind of create, I guess, this closer relationship with Bruce Banner.
Yeah.
And she has her own, like, dynamic with Tony, you know? Her and Pepper have, like, a different relation with Tony. And, you know, Black Widow's kind of allowed to not just be sexualized as much as Tony tries to. She's allowed to kind of just banter with him and be able to speak, like, on the same level as he is.
Now, she's definitely one of the least powered of the Avengers teams. How do you think they handle that? Do they handle it pretty well, would you say?
I think so. I think they're able to, like, play to her strengths. Like, what comes to mind is that big battle scene in the Avengers where you get that nice, like, circle shot of them all, like, gearing up to fight the aliens. And, you know, everyone who has, like, powers, like, jumps off to do what they're gonna do. And I think her and Hawkeye kind of, they seem to have, like, their own thing worked out. Like, they know they can't quite do what everyone else is able to. So they take on like the more practical side of things, like, okay, we need to get transportation because we need a way to be mobile in this fight. We can pick things off one by one. So let's see where, like, who could benefit from us picking off a target, you know, picking off a bad guy. So I think she ends up, just being like played to her strengths. I think in Civil War, she kind of falls more into that, role as a negotiator between sides. But it, at least from my memory, didn't feel like the negotiation between men. She at least felt like she was trying to just keep the peace within this group because it was like literally life and death.
She was at least given cause to be split in between.
Yeah, like she had like good relationships with people on both sides of the issue. As like a spy, her communication skills have to be really, really good. So it makes sense that she's kind of the one to take the middle ground and try to bridge something between Tony and Captain America, as I forget his name.
Steve.
I don't like him enough to remember his name, and I feel a little bad about that. But I think he's got enough people backing him that I can forget his name sometimes. But yeah, she kind of tries to bridge things between Steve and Tony. Doesn't work. And then they kind of get into combat. And I don't really remember what she does in combat. If she does very much. I think she shoots at someone. Definitely.
She has her little, like, wrist electro shooters she likes to use.
That is cool. She gets, like, the gadgets.
Yeah.
She kind of becomes... spy. Yeah, she becomes kind of like a less clunky Batman. True. Where she gets a lot of, like, the cool gadgets and she's able to kind of take stuff over from, like, a technological point of view.
Yeah, breaking her tokenhood.
Yeah.
Is Scarlet Witch. One of the more powerful members of the Avengers, oddly. Like, her and Vision and Hulk kind of rounding out the strongest members of the team.
Well, don't forget about Thor.
That's true. I would argue that while she's not that in control of her powers, she's potentially stronger than Thor.
I think I would agree with that, since we see how much magic messes with Thor as his movies kind of go on.
Yeah, and there's the argument of how much of her stuff's magic, since she's a mutant, but not a mutant, because they're not allowed to call them mutants in these movies.
Are they allowed to now? Like, they bought
Who
Fox.
Knows? Who knows?
Who's to say?
That's not for us today.
Not for us. Not today.
Yeah. But yeah, how do you think her being obscenely powered, her kind of being another woman figure in the Avengers, how do you think she plays in the group?
So, like, you mentioned, like, how powerful she is and how strong her powers are. And I think because of that, they had to cripple her with not knowing how to use her powers quite as much as she maybe should or could have. And that kind of falls into, like, the trap of, like, yeah, you can have strong women, but not too strong. Because, like, we literally have a god in the Avengers. And he's fine. He gets to slam his hammer whenever he wants and fuck up what he wants to fuck up. And Hulk is kind of afforded the same thing. But, like, Scarlet Witch has to be restrained, probably for, like, plot convenience, because I don't think it works well to have such an OP character that can just literally use their powers for whatever they want, as far as, like, we're told as an audience. We don't ever really get a good sense of what her power's limits are. But, like, it's still kind of sad to kind of get a glimpse of such a powerful female superhero. Only to kind of have her emotionally crippled, almost. And, like, she kind of ends up needing to be taken care of and, like, literally restrained in a different place. For a lot of Civil War, right? Or was it in Avengers 2?
It's in Civil War.
It's in Civil War.
Essentially,
is Avengers Civil War 3. Avengers?
No.
Oh.
It's Captain America.
Oh 3. My god.
I know.
Oh, okay. But once she's there, you kind of get a glimpse of what she can do. But she seems to be, like, immediately taken out of the game so that she doesn't get too powerful, doesn't unbalance the scales too much, you know?
Well, again, since it seems my role has become classic white man devil advocate, she does get out of her entrapment by fighting potentially the strongest member of the Avengers, Vision.
Yeah.
And just buries him deep in the ground.
That is true.
Also, we kind of have a comparison with Spider-Man, potentially, as far as, like, characters who are very powerful but are kind of limited by still learning their craft.
Right.
So at least there's that.
Mm-hmm.
Getting into, like, the other Marvel MCU super team, we've got Guardians of the Galaxy with their own token woman.
Their
very own woman.
That's great.
That they'll get to add into the Avengers later.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. That'll be good. That'll be cool. I don't quite have a handle on Gamora.
Yes.
Yes.
Zoe Saldana.
I like her. She's good in things. She's nice. She's a really good actress.
One of the few standouts in Avatar.
Yeah. Very much.
But not to talk about Avatar.
But I'm not quite clear on what Gamora does. Just because I think I've only seen both of the Guardians of the Galaxy films once. And I think both times I was kind of too caught up in, like, the spectacle and also, like, the comedy of it. So I don't really know what she does. And you might have a better understanding of that.
Well, again, we have a character that's one of the stronger members of her team.
Mm-hmm.
Although that's a little hard to quantify since we're not really sure how good Groot is.
Yeah.
Although Groot dies and then there's second Groot.
I keep hearing that that's, like, Groot's son.
Kind of, I guess. Because it's not him anymore.
Birthed from him.
Birthed from a twig.
Right. Okay. And so then, Groot's kind of a wild card.
Yeah, Drax is arguably stronger, but he's not as good of a fighter.
Yeah.
Because she's trained and fought various warriors. So it's not really clear exactly where she fits.
Yeah.
She lifts up obscenely heavy things as if it's nothing.
So she's like, if Natasha and Bruce had a child, it would be Gamora.
I think you just want to say that because she's green.
She has a lot more strength than Natasha does.
That's true.
Like, maybe Hulk-ish strength.
True, true. She has an emotional backstory, but mm-hmm. she's also very emotionless as a character.
Yeah, which I found interesting. Because that's, like, the other option with, like, female characters is to make them, like, unfeeling and make them kind of, like, shrewish. I don't know. I still found her likable, though. Like, I didn't find her unlikable because of that. And I thought it was an interesting take on the, like, oh, you guys kind of thing, where she just kind of literally forces them to get their shit together.
That's true. That's
like, it's true. Not at all, like, a nurturing kind of, oh, I need to take care of everyone. She's like, we're literally gonna die if you guys don't stop, like, dicking around right now. You guys gotta quit. I'm just gonna boost the spaceship real fast, and we're gonna get going.
True.
Technically,
we do get another female addition to the team at the end of Guardians 2 with Mantis.
Oh, yeah.
But it's kind of too soon to say much about her.
Yeah, Mantis's character was weird. I've heard a lot of people kind of have issues with Mantis's character because she does seem to kind of just be, like, a nurturing woman. And also almost, like, an exoticized, very token woman. Like, a lot of women have connected her to kind of, like, the demure, nurturing, like, desperate for affection kind of character. Which is unfortunate that she kind of evokes that. But I kind of liked her quirkiness as a character as she was.
I will say one of the good things about her character being that way is how well she played off of Drax.
Yeah.
They had some very touching moments in Guardians 2.
But off of that, like, how well does she function without Drax? How well does she function just as a character existing in the story?
See, and I'm guessing that'll be explored a little more in the future, since she wasn't given a lot to do, since there was so much going on.
Right. Yeah, that's, and I think that's kind of one of the struggles of these franchises, is that I think there's, like, a want to establish these female characters, but there's, again, there's not as much faith in these female characters, and they have this idea that they have longer to show their powers, and they have longer to kind of flesh them out, and so when you look at the movies as, like, standalone pieces, you don't always end up with, like, the greatest representation. You do kind of end up with these women standing around a lot in these, like, faux origin stories that you get.
True. And just to give Marvel a little more credit, they've had planned for forever the Captain Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Which is coming out after, I guess, in between the Infinity War films.
Yeah. Are there more than one?
Yeah, it's been split into two.
Oh my god. I'm so tired of that. That's a different conversation. Well,
what they say is Infinity War doesn't exactly wrap up. It does more than you would think, and then the repercussions of it are more the next one.
Okay, that actually sounds interesting. I like that.
Yeah, which, who's to know how true that is. But to go to the, like, last classic big Marvel team, we have, from the Fox side of things, the X-Men, which also has a lot of women, ex-women.
A lot of women, yeah.
Especially the original trilogy of films.
Oh, yeah.
Follows two people most predominantly, one being Wolverine, but the other being Rogue.
Mm-hmm.
A woman.
Yes, I realized where you were going with that. I don't quite remember Rogue as much. I kind of remember Mystique a lot. Storm, who I love. I love Storm a lot. I wish I got to see more of her. Which I think you kind of get in, like, Days of Future Past. But Days of Future Past is such a mess of a movie that it's hard to see a lot of anyone.
Yeah, she's one of the least touched on characters. I think in part because Halle Berry was pregnant during the filming of Days of Future Past. Yeah. So it's one of those shoot around the belly kind of things.
Ellen Page was also in that one.
That's right. Well, she was in the original three, too.
Oh, yeah.
Just not as big of a role. She's kind of a romantic rival of Rogue for the Iceman's heart.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, just, they're very high school-y, these X-Men movies, now that thinking about them at all.
Well, because they seem to kind of fall into that allegory for queerness that you kind of have when you take on, like, fantasy or superhero narratives.
Well, X-Men's always been about discrimination, and what was the big discrimination thing at the time? It was the sexuality-based discrimination.
Yeah, so, and I think, and that was kind of something that had a lot of visibility culturally in high schools, like, in teenagers. Like, teenagers were a lot of the people that were dealing with this, and that's what we were seeing a lot of. And so I think, like, you're definitely right that they're, their dynamics tend to be much more like high school drama. I mean, it's at least from what I remember, like, it's a very school-based group. Like,
that's true.
They've all been taught together, like, they're peers. They've, like, worked and learned and been taught together. And so they do kind of have that dynamic where they're their own little community, and therefore emotions of all sorts run high because they don't really have anywhere else to put them.
Yeah, and you end up with complexities with each of the female characters. Like, Storm's very powerful and very passionate about her powers, much to the chagrin of Rogue, who hates her powers. And it's kind of easy for Storm to say how great her powers are when she can make rain.
Yeah.
And Rogue kills people by draining their life with her hands.
Yeah. You kind of, it's an interesting thing. Like, what do you do when you are innately evil? Like, how do you show pride?
Yeah, but in addition to this, Storm is also I think I remember her being the next in line for the headmaster position
behind
Professor X. And then you also have Jean Grey, who is supposed to be one of the smartest and more powerful members of the team.
Mm-hmm.
But she also functions a lot as a person in a love triangle between Cyclops and Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who isn't a love interest for Wolverine, though?
I mean, who is Wolverine not a love interest for, I guess, is what I'd argue with
that. That's very fair. That's very fair.
Hugh Jackman.
You know what I do find interesting? Talking about Wolverine and all of his various interactions with these women. Once you get to Logan, this is again a film where he has a lot of interaction with a female character. But she's a very small female character. She's like a child.
That's true.
Which and is amazing to see.
I'd say she shares, if not second billing, third billing behind Professor X.
Yeah. Yeah, like in Logan we get to see actually like a really well-written, really fleshed out female superhero who like, and we've kind of talked about like these superheroes having to learn their powers and that can sometimes be a hindrance. But, like, she's also kind of discovering her powers as, like, a 6 or 7 year old child, is it?
Something like that. Something she's like very that. Young.
She's very
Maybe
young.
Maybe a little older, but not a lot.
Yeah, she's, like, she's a product of experimentation.
Not to give too much away, since this is a slightly newer movie.
Right, but, I mean, it's connected to X-Men, so you can assume she's somehow a product of experimentation. And she kind of spends a lot of the film dealing with her powers and dealing with what she can do. And I actually hadn't thought of her this whole time while we were discussing this.
She's oddly probably one of the more well-rounded female characters in these movies, and she hardly says anything.
She does. She hardly speaks. I was blown away by that character when we watched that movie. I was blown away by the whole movie, but I was blown away.
Like, what a good job for a child actor,
yeah. I mean, she has such a good story arc as well. Like, she comes into her own throughout this film, which is, like, amazing to watch a child character kind of go through these stages in character development and reach a point of maturity and kind of, like, take on a different role at the end of the film. Yeah, I don't know. Great character. Great child actor. Great film.
True, true.
Every other movie, take note. Write all of your characters like this.
I suppose to touch on the last of the X-Men characters, we have Mystique, who in the original three is a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Uses her sexuality a lot.
Yeah.
To kind of
she's kind of like
get
a
her way.
Femme fatale.
Yeah, essentially. Femme fatale. Essentially. And then kind of in the newer films, different actress, Jennifer Lawrence instead of Rebecca Romijn.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the time, Rebecca Romijn Stamos.
Oh, yeah.
But she's kind of given a different thing to do in the newer X-Men films, kind of taking on a hero role.
Yeah.
Or kind of a conflicted anti-hero kind of role, I suppose is more accurate.
And then we kind of explore that to like an extreme in Days of Future Past, where she just ruins everything, essentially. But
in the end, she saves
in the end, yeah, she does. But she does get to explore, like, both extremes of this conflict she's been having. You know, she gets to mess everything up and be, like, the bane of everyone's existence. But then she still has that chance for redemption, and she takes it. And then it's all happy and good.
Yeah, she's still... And I think a singular scene, though this time uses her sexuality as a weapon when she's kind of seducing a North Vietnamese general.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that's about the one time where that's kind of her go-to in the original three.
Yeah.
So that's a step up.
Yeah.
That's a step up.
I think so. I wish I could divorce that from, like, the male filmmaker perspective. Because it's always interesting to me when female characters choose to utilize their sexuality and choose to utilize the way men interact with them to their advantage. But there's also the fact that, like, there are a lot of men behind the production of this film, and a lot of men like to see sexy, attractive women being sexy and attractive. So I don't ever really know how to feel about these moments.
I have a hard time when it's comic book films too, because all they have to go on is like a 60-year-old tradition of men writing things.
Yeah.
So do you change things to make things a little better? Do you stay true to the characters as they're written? It's kind of more complicated with these, and
I think it's hard to say. I guess the solution is just to give like the female characters more agency then over sexualized they are.
That's fair. So that kind of wrapped up the big teams to a lesser extent. We had Valkyrie in Thor 3.
Yeah, Valkyrie was great.
She was a great character. I think in the comics they made her a lesbian character.
Interesting.
She's picking up women, at least like not exclusively straight, because she's picking up women in bars. I don't know if that's going to come through to the films or how much her character is even going to be in the films after Thor 3.
I don't know why I thought the film nodded to that. And I don't know if we discussed this while we were watching it, but I felt like there was something in the film nodding to her not just being straight, but it might have just been the fact that she didn't seem to have strong sexual chemistry with Thor.
There's some,
but and that's what leads me to believe there's maybe something there. But I feel there were a couple times where I was like, unsure. I like feeling unsure about characters' sexualities, though. Because the default is often straight. So I like those moments where I'm like, oh, wait. Maybe something else is going on here.
True.
It's always interesting to me.
To a lesser extent, another film, there's Lego Batman.
Where have
the Bat member of the family, formerly known as Batgirl. She kind of refuses to take up the mantle of Batgirl in the Lego Batman movie. We have the introduction to the fact that in this incarnation, she's not white.
Yeah.
Which is nice. I don't remember the actress that voices her.
No, I don't either.
That's a bummer.
That is.
She's someone good. But anyway, it kind of explores it a bit from Batman's pretty male.
Yeah.
Like, even in Dark Knight Rises, we get a female anti-hero
for Catwoman.
She's a burglar, but she also does good things.
She's like Robin Hood,
essentially.
Yeah,
but she also serves as a love interest to the main character.
Yeah.
And in the 80s Batman films, we had Catwoman again, but that time she's kind of more of a bad guy, but she's a complicated bad guy,
right?
Whereas they're kind of taking femininity back for the Bat films.
And yeah.
I enjoy that.
I like that trend. I appreciate that. But let's not, if we're talking about Catwoman, let's not gloss over the woman power film, Catwoman, with Halle Berry. If we're going to talk about Halle Berry, too.
That's true. A lot of people say that it kept female superhero movies from existing.
I would not be surprised by that, because it wasn't a formally great film.
Yeah, I oddly don't hate it.
Right?
It kind of felt in the vein of the Charlie's Angels films.
Yeah.
Because you have a scantily clad woman doing kick-ass things.
Yeah.
And it's action-y, and it's cut very fast, and it's fun, but it's not great.
No, it's not at all great. But, like, I will say, watching that film, I was inspired. I was, like, I wanted to be Catwoman so badly after that film. So they at least did a really good job of, like, showing off how cool Catwoman could be.
True.
While also managing to muddy it with a beauty industry scandal, which I think could have been a lot more interesting than it was.
I don't know whether to love that that's the bad guy or hate it. I personally kind of like it,
but
again, I'm the man here. So.
Well, I think having the beauty industry as, like, the bad guy she has to, like, eventually confront, I think that's interesting, because it kind of speaks to...
Are you letting Catwoman be that deep of a film?
Oh, yeah. I think that was intentional, because I think it kind of speaks to the relationship women have with cosmetic companies, where it's something we accept as part of our lives, but it's also something that doesn't always serve us well, and it's something that can so easily something that can be utilized for, like, negative effects and targeted negative effects for, like, the community of people that uses it. I don't really want to make this comparison because of the implications, but it's kind of like Joker poisoning the water supply. Like, you know it's going to reach a lot of people if you poison it.
He also poisons beauty products.
Does he?
In the first Batman film. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's great. Like, he knows what's going on. Like, a lot of people have access to that. So when you poison that, you're affecting a lot of people. So I think it does kind of... I think Catwoman does kind of make an attempt to discuss femininity and existing as a woman. And it, like, taps into all of these very, like, woman power things, like cats in general, which I think is a little inescapable with Catwoman, but, like, it's very mystical. So it kind of taps into that connection women have, like, with magic and mysticism and...
I don't know if
all
it's
of these things.
Because of the woman we got, which was an older woman who explains this cat power to her.
Yeah.
But it felt very, like, middle-aged white woman mystical.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Which is hilarious. And something I'm always up for. Like, middle-aged white woman mysticism is the best in films.
Oh, jeez.
Charmed mysticism is the best in film.
True. And... So with this film, a lot of people claim that it kind of stopped there being female superhero movies, which is weird that one movie can stop, like, a gender of films.
Yeah.
You don't hear, like, a bad man movie being like, well, no more white men for the screen for a bit.
Well, and I think that's the issue you run into with, like, minority-led films.
True.
Is that they tend to speak for the entire, like, the success of such a film. And that was even led by, like, a black female.
True.
And so I think that...
It was Halle Berry, too.
Yeah.
She was A-list.
Yeah. So I think... And I think that was kind of the thing where it's like, okay, well, if Halle Berry couldn't pull it off, who's going to be able to pull this off?
That's true.
So I think, like... I think the pitfalls of that are even greater because of all the factors involved.
That's true. Perhaps it's a misnomer to say it killed the lady films. It definitely kind of started to put the coffin together. But
right.
The last nail is probably Elektra.
Ooh, Jennifer Garner.
Jennifer Garner. I barely remember this movie. I saw it not long after it came out on DVD.
Uh-huh. Which was like 2005?
It came out in theaters in 2005.
Okay.
So probably 2005 or 6.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's kind of a Western take on Wire Fu. She kind of... is a ninja assassin that died in Daredevil, but she came back to life for Elektra.
Oh.
Because there's weird mystical stuff.
More mystical stuff.
But you know, it kind of, between the two of them, you kind of had to wait a bit for the women-led films.
Yeah, I think everyone needed, like, a breather after Jennifer Garner-led superhero film.
True.
And maybe I should give Jennifer Garner more props. I'm sure she could make a very pleasant superhero, given a good plot to follow. So maybe that just wasn't her film.
Potentially. And kind of polishing off the films that we have, a lot of, we're not going to touch on them all.
Oh yeah,
definitely not. I don't have any context for the Supergirl film that I think came out in the 80s or 90s. 80,
like 84, 85.
Yeah, I've not seen this.
I hear either.
It's funny bad.
Like
it's not great,
yeah.
But it's so bad it's maybe worthwhile. I don't know.
Right, and then like you have like the Buffy movie, which is almost a superhero movie.
I'm never sure where to put things like that.
Yeah, but since that was more successful as a show, I don't think we'll tackle that here.
True. You have Jessica Alba in Fantastic Four.
But, like...
She is kind of there to be with Mr. Fantastic,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, she's there to be
the
sexy.
Films. That, too. The stripping while invisible thing.
Yeah.
Kind of speaks to that a lot. She doesn't have a lot to do. She also is kind of stuck with the now boys
yeah
thing a lot.
And I didn't see, like, the newer Fantastic Four. So I don't know. I didn't
either.
I don't know how they all work together at all.
True.
I heard that one flopped incredibly.
Yeah, yeah, I've not heard great things about it. And then you have what a lot of people say is the best Fantastic Four movie, The Incredibles.
Hey!
You have two females in there. That's like half women on that team.
Yeah, on the good side.
Yeah?
On the bad side, you still got a nice woman.
Oh, that's true. That's true. She's kind of the henchman
for
the bad guy, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Nothing implied sexual there between them either. Are you sure? I mean,
he grabs her a couple times, and I'm never sure. Like,
maybe it's harassment kind.
I'm never sure what the line is. If this is just like workplace harassment, or if they're involved and he's trying to like be playful.
Yeah, I doubt the HR department's great in the supervillain world.
Yeah,
but Elastigirl, Mrs. Incredible, whatever they wanna. Want to call her there. She's a strong mother figure.
Yeah.
Which, like, a lot of people try to get away from that when they're talking about women movies, but that is a role.
Yeah, and I think it's important to realize that, like, mother characters aren't bad in and of themselves. Like, I think she does really well at, like, representing what it takes to be a mother and, like, what is required to be a mother and how that kind of meshes with her own personal sense of self, like how she operates outside of being a mother and a wife. I think we get just like a good sense of who she is.
True. And we talked about, or I talked about this with Sarah a little bit in the Pixar episode.
Oh, yeah.
But I like that her superpower is kind of an allegory for what mothers do. She's very flexible. She's able to protect her children in that flexibleness.
Yeah,
it just kind of serves the motherly roles, having to do everything all at once, and it's nice.
Yeah,
it's a nice touch.
It's a fun little take, I think.
We also get a similar thing with the daughter Violet. She can turn invisible, which seems to be what she wants to do a lot, being an awkward teenage girl.
But like, she also has this like force field power.
True.
Which is interesting if like you look at her role as the older sibling. Where she's in a position where she kind of has to protect her younger siblings. So I think that's interesting that you can find so much of a connection between, like, the family identities these people have and, like, the powers that they then take on as people.
That's true. I hear from essentially the teaser trailer for Incredibles 2 that it's going to be based around Mrs. Incredible doing essentially what Mr. Incredible did in the first movie. She gets a job superheroing and he has to stay home and take care of the kids.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting take. Not one I expected them to go.
Right. Definitely not.
How do you think it's going to go?
They did a good enough job with the first one dealing with, her name's Helen, right?
Yeah, Helen.
Yeah, Helen. Dealing with Helen as a mother figure, but also as, like, a superhero. That I think this one will do well enough that it won't, like, demonize her for stepping away from the family. I think it's, like, trying to take a more modern take on what parenting is and what a home life looks like. And I think it's going to be interesting to see how she kind of wrangles with what Bob had to wrangle with in the first movie, you know, that kind of sense of like, yeah, I'm stepping away from my family, I'm kind of almost abandoning my family, but I'm doing what I have to do to make it better for them in the long run. And I think that'll be an interesting thing to watch her deal with.
True. And it kind of makes sense a little more since the film's going to be set in, like, I think the late 60s. We don't get a clear sense of when it takes place, but it's definitely like the mid-60s during the first Incredibles movie.
It is interesting that these movies seem to exist in a different time, but they seem to be made still with the ideology that we have in a more modern context. Like, they're not like a traditional 60s household. Like, she and Bob kind of communicate very equally, not kind of like Kitty and Red do in 70s show. Which is, I think, more representative of how, like, traditional households were expected to work.
True. And who knows how much of that is, like, just how things are portrayed now. And how much things actually were.
Yeah. Like, I guess I can't speak to that since I did not exist then. which is an odd sentence to say.
True.
Getting a little existential over here. But yeah, it at least seems to be a more modern take on just superhero dynamics and superhero interactions, which is nice. And I like that.
True. So this will be the last podcast episode to round out March. It's kind of not really an accident that this is a female-oriented episode, kind of playing off of Women's March, something a lot of artistic institutions are trying to do for the month.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that, like, you kind of want to leave off on for Women's March?
For Women's March, I'm just really excited about what I've been seeing with women in the film industry. I'm excited that specifically Film Scene, our local independent movie theater, has taken on the mantle of only showing films made by women this entire month. I think that's really great. I think it kind of reminds you that it hasn't literally been zero women up to this point. But I'm genuinely really excited with, like, what I'm seeing for opportunities and for women in the industry. And I'm excited that we've come to a place where I can fully appreciate female characters in superhero movies and not be satisfied with the fact that they're there at all. You know? Like, everything from, like, Wonder Woman to the, like, newer Avengers movies, even to Black Panther with the Dora Milaje, like, the whole kind of female army that Wakanda has at its disposal, and Shuri, T'Challa's sister, and of course, like, the queen. Like, I'm so excited that, like, women are finally being given, like, space, specifically in superhero movies, to succeed. I think that's awesome.
Great. Well, it's been nice talking with you about women, superheroes, women superheroes.
Heck yeah.
And, well, until next time, everybody.